Welcome to Today's Issues. Join us for the next hour as we offer a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Ed Vitagliano.
And good morning. Welcome to Today's Issues. It is Monday. It is July 23rd. We're running out of days in July. With me in the studio is Walker Wildman. Good morning, Walker.
Good morning. Good to be here on the show.
It is. We really are. We are running out of days in July. We'll soon hit August, my birthday month. I know the world will celebrate that fact. No, just a very small portion of it, if you will. I'm not even sure my family
will celebrate it.
I'll celebrate it. But
when I say I'll celebrate it, I'll tell you happy birthday.
Okay.
That's about it.
All right. Fred Jackson, News Director for American Family News and One News Now. Good morning, Fred.
Good morning. Great to be with you. And we're celebrating here already because it's about 4 degrees cooler than it was this time last week.
Yes.
And that's a big deal here. The humidity's been down the last couple of days. We actually sat outside under some trees and ate some lunch over the last few days. And that may not sound a big deal if you live further north,
right,
but down here with the kind of summer that we've had here in the Deep South,
it's been brutal.
It's been a blessing. I drove to work this morning. My daughter texted me also. We drove to work with the windows down in the car.
Ooh, that is a nice feeling. Turned the air conditioning off.
So, again, for a lot of folks, what's the big deal? It's a big deal when you can do that on July 23rd.
July and August in Mississippi, and that's where our flagship station is. If you're listening to American Family Radio somewhere in the 38 states where we have 184 stations, our flagship station's in Tupelo, Mississippi, and being a northerner, now my wife is from Mississippi, my kids raised here since ground up, my son was born here, Mississippi, July and August, every year I regret being here. Okay, July and August only. Now, I will say I embarrassed myself Sunday. This is not going to come as a surprise to anyone who knows me. I frequently put my foot in my mouth. My wife and I leave Sunday school just a little bit early because we're greeters at the front door of our church. And so my wife and I are standing. Our doors are open, you know, with our bulletins as you know, people are coming. And there was a slight breeze outside. And I told my wife, I said, "This weather is fantastic. It feels like spring." And I went on, and my wife looked at me, and she said, "You know the air conditioning is running out of the church past you outside." I said, "Oh, yeah, that's right. I thought it was the breeze. You know, the breeze was blowing."
Right.
And so I said, well, first I checked it. I got out a little bit further away from the door down the stairs, and it was hot wind blowing. And then I went back up, and I said, "Well, you're right." So my wife just, you know, I'll talk and talk, blah, blah, blah. And then she just looked at me and said, "You know, the air conditioning is blowing out the door." So that was a little embarrassing. And I just wanted to share that with everybody.
That's right. Yeah. That's right.
All right. Well, we got to get to the news of the day. What's happening, Fred?
Well, Branson, Missouri, one of the most popular tourist spots, certainly in the eastern part of the country. But it was the site of a great tragedy last Thursday evening. They have what's called duck boats there. And a lot of our listeners, I think, would be familiar with them. They are ex-military vehicles. They have like big tires on them so that they can run on land, but also they can go in the water.
Right.
And they were used by the military. I'm not sure how far back. But a lot of tourist areas use them now. If, you know, I've seen them in use in Canada as well. They take tourists around. They can drive around some streets and then they go in the water. Well, in Branson, Missouri, they've had an operation similar to that using these duck boats now for many, many years. Last Thursday evening, it was a regular evening, and they have a couple of these duck boats there, and they had a lot of tourists, obviously, this time of the year. And two of the duck boats were out on a lake, and unbeknownst to them, just a storm front moved through. And there had been some warnings, we're told by meteorologists in Springfield, which is just north of Branson there, Springfield, Missouri, that there was a warning that the winds could pick up very suddenly, anywhere from, you know, 60-mile-an-hour winds. Well, one of these duck boats got caught out on this lake, and it began to take on water, and probably most people have heard now that this vessel began to sink. There were more than 20 people on board, and sad to say that 17 people lost their lives in that. And the story has unfolded since then. Amongst those 17 who died, there was a family of 11 folks. I believe they were from Indiana, I think it was, and all from one family, and 9 members of that family perished.
Because there's 17 deaths reported.
Yes.
Out of 20.
Yeah.
So for the most part, everybody on board.
On board.
Including this large family.
So the National Transportation Safety Board has been there. The Coast Guard is involved with the investigation. This is not the first time one of these duck boats have been involved in such a tragedy. Back several years ago in Hot Springs, Arkansas, there was loss of life in a similar type situation. As we're here today, the Coast Guard is making an effort this morning to now raise that vessel to the surface. It's in 80 feet of water. These lakes are deep.
Right.
It's in 80 feet of water. They hope to bring it to the surface. Apparently, there is some kind of video recorder aboard these vessels, and they're hoping this can help them in the investigation. Now, you probably heard some reports over the weekend. You know, the first thing people trying to do is figure out what went wrong.
Right.
Questions that are being asked, was the operation, the company that runs these boats, were they aware of this weather warning?
Right.
Which came out 40 minutes to an hour ahead of when these vessels went out. Number two, were they told by the captain of this vessel to put on the life jackets? We understand there were life jackets aboard. Were they told the life jackets were optional? So that's a question that has to be answered, because there were a couple of survivors. So we're going to find this out. But that aside, it's a tragedy. There were stories that came out on the weekend. For instance, this family of 11 that were aboard this vessel, they were due to be on the other vessel that was out that made it to shore safely. But they stopped for some selfies on the dock to take pictures. So they missed that one, and they were on this boat. Another couple of fatalities. It was a couple, I think, celebrating the 70th birthday of the wife. They had debated on whether to go to Nashville or to Branson to celebrate, and they decided to go to Branson. So we're starting to get these kinds of stories.
We heard a lot of those after 9/11, remember?
Yeah.
Somebody was running late for work, or they stopped to get donuts, and those kinds of would turn out to be fateful decisions. Of course, none of us know ahead of time how one of our decisions will be fateful, but but that you hear those kinds of things, and it just it adds to the deep sadness and sorrow people have for these folks and their families, because you think, well, one decision to turn right or turn left, and all these people are alive today.
Yeah, and that's the case with this boat. It's one of those things where you don't think about the dangers associated with the type of vehicle / boat they're in until after the fact, and then you're like, wow, why would people ride in that? But you look at it, and I've read some reports on it and people familiar with those type of boats, and really, if that thing flips or sinks, you're stuck, because it's not like a typical boat where the top's open, and if it flips, then you fall in the water and find your way up.
Right.
This is, if it flips, you got to get your, it's almost like it's in being in a vehicle on water and it flipping, and you know, getting out of a vehicle underwater and you can't see, it's impossible. And that's probably what attributed and made it so fatal, is the fact that you're entrapped. You've got, it's like a school bus, and you can't get out.
And if you have other people with you that are family, you're trying to get them out as well. Now, there are some reports too that that someone had actually done some checking on these boats, an inspection on the duck boats. This is a report from one of the local media outlets, I think, in that area. There was a private vehicle inspector from St. Louis who is now saying he knew there were design flaws in the duck boat. He actually went to Branson last summer. This is from OzarkFirst.com, to inspect the duck boats, and he said he was concerned about some engine pipe locations where water could seep in And then also, like you're talking about, Walker, the canopy over the passengers, he said it turned the boat into a people trapper. So one of those kinds of terrible, you know, tragedies that unfortunately will probably get, corrected too late. Obviously, you will for these people.
Yeah.
But sometimes it's the kind of case where the people wind up locking the barn door after the horses escaped. Mm-hmm. And we, I guess we learn our way through these tragedies, I guess the hard way. So
it is. Last night there was a memorial service there. Hundreds of people showed up for that. So we just want to remember the families affected by all of this in prayer. And, you know, the company that runs these things, they've been around for 40 years. This is the first accident that they have had. Remember those folks, too. They're just trying to provide a good time for folks to go visit.
Right.
It's a beautiful area down there. And
did the captain die, or is it just passengers?
The captain of that vessel, I believe, his life lost, too.
Yeah, I thought one of the operators survived, only four survivors, because there were 21 on board, 17 passed away.
I think the man identified as the captain perished, but there was a staff member also that was on there.
Oh. Yeah, and the another thing to mention, and as I alluded to this, there's reports that people weren't wearing life jackets. That is important. You are on the water, but from what I've read about these boats being on, like in a school bus, life jacket's not going to matter unless you escape and then you need to float to the top.
Right.
It seems to be the problem here was people not even being able to escape the boat in the first place to then even need a life jacket. So,
Somebody was taking pictures with their cell phone on the shore, and those videos are out there.
Oh, that's
horrific. As those winds came up, and it was very, very sudden. As can happen, you know, in that part of the world in the summertime, these fronts come through, and I tell you what, it's just a gale within seconds.
Yeah.
And so you had these waves, and you saw the boat struggling to get back to the docks, but those waves were coming in over the front of the thing. So that's when it began to take on water. And so just remember these dear folks in prayer.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. What do we got next?
Well, a story that we've been talking about for some time now. You may remember Congressman Devin Nunes. He is the chairman of the House Intelligence Committee. Way back in February of this year, he had some access to the application that was made to the FISA court. This was the court that was set up in the wake of 9/11 to gather intelligence, some from U.S. citizens and others. So there's this FISA court that was out there. There was an application made to basically spy on a former volunteer worker with the Trump campaign. Devin Nunes saw the application. When he saw that application, he issued a memo. That memo came out, which was immediately attacked by Democrats in the mainstream media. But in that memo, Devin Nunes described what happened and the intricacies of this application. Basically, the then head of the FBI, James Comey, this was the fall of 2016 we're talking about, so he was referencing back to activities that occurred then. The then director of the FBI, James Comey, an assistant, Andrew McCabe, who is no longer there, the Attorney General of the United States at the time, Loretta Lynch, they, in this application to FISA to spy on Carter Page, this volunteer with the Trump campaign, they used what became known as the Steele dossier. The Steele dossier was a document, basically was an instrument, a tool that was used by the Hillary Clinton campaign to gather information about the Trump campaign.
Opposition research.
Well, James Comey, the FBI, the CIA, and others were using this political partial document, the Steele dossier, as evidence to go to the FISA court to get their permission to spy on Carter Page.
All right, now let me see if I understand this correctly, okay?
Yes.
The FISA court is the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act.
Correct.
So you go before this court, just working out the process here for our listeners, you go before this court and you say, we think a foreign national who may be spying on or doing something against the interests of the United States is communicating with someone in the U.S., a U.S. citizen. So you ask the court for permission to do surveillance. We used to call it wiretapping. It's a little more sophisticated than that. But in trying to gather intelligence on the foreign person, you are going to hear stuff on a phone conversation with an American citizen. So you need a warrant for that. So what these folks did is they had this Steele dossier. Now, when I mentioned opposition research, all political campaigns try to gather dirt on their opponents, but it's stuff that's true. So you want to dig up on your political opponent something they did 20 years ago to try to get voters not to vote for them. This Steele dossier, even though it started off as opposition research, didn't actually get real information. It's made up stuff. So it's stuff that was made up, as far as we can tell, completely made up about Donald Trump. And that's what they took to the FISA court. Okay, so this isn't actual, this isn't arrest records or right. things like that from Trump or anything like that. This is made up stuff. So they go to this FISA court and they say, we're going to have to spy on U.S. citizens because they have a Russian that they're involved with. Mm-hmm. So I just want to make sure our listeners understand this Steele dossier is a complete fabrication.
Right.
It was paid for by the DNC, the Democratic National Committee, and the Clinton campaign. Mm-hmm. And so really, to start this off here, if anyone was actually giving money to Russians, this went to a former British spy who paid money into Russia to get this made-up information.
Now, when Nunes came out with his memo, he also made the allegation at the time, based on the research that he had, that when James Comey, and because Carter Page is a U.S. citizen, they have to go back and reapply every 90 days. Three times, the then director of the FBI, James Comey, went back to the FISA court. Let's keep this spying up. Let's keep this spying up. Nunes also made public that in making the application using this dossier as their evidence, he also let it be known that they didn't tell the FISA court what they were basing their application on. In other words, the FISA court was completely ignorant of the Steele dossier. They used information, James Comey and Loretta Lynch, the attorney general at the time, from the dossier, but they didn't think it was necessary to tell the court that they, and Andrew McCabe, who has since been fired as the deputy FBI director, he even confessed during a hearing that without that dossier, they never would have gotten permission from the FISA court.
Because there would have been nothing to tell the FISA court to get permission to spy on a U.S. citizen.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah, there are two things here. There are two specific FBI rules that were broken here. And the first one is you're not supposed to use unverified information in a warrant application. The second thing is, and that's common sense, the second thing is they did not reveal the source of the information, which was the Clinton campaign and the DNC. Two key facts that should have been included in the application to the judge, and they didn't know it. But it begs the question, would the judge have even objected if he would have revealed that information? And I don't think he would have, because the judge, with the last name Contreras, was friends with Peter Strzok, the guy submitting the application. They do parties together. They have him over for dinner through the text messages with Lisa Page. So it's his best friend at the FISA court. I don't know that he would have turned him down. So there's a lot of stinky things going on with connections and who knows who. And who signed off on it? And we know that Rod Rosenstein at least signed off on one of these when he was first sworn.
Well, and the reason we're bringing this back, I'm not sure we've made this clear yet, the reason we're bringing back the Nunes memo from February this morning is, during the weekend, a conservative legal group, Judicial Watch, succeeded in getting enforcing the intelligence community to release all of this information, the FISA application. All right?
Right.
So the big news this morning is people are looking at the actual application that Nunes had access to several months ago, and they're saying, by golly gee, Nunes didn't lie to us. The stuff that was in his memo that the Democrats dumped all over and—
Oh, it's partisan. It's, yeah. You can't trust
it. It turns out he's exactly true, everything that he said. This is absolutely amazing. We got a few minutes before the break. I wanted to read what the Washington Examiner newspaper, and maybe we can make a link to that for our audience to see. So you can go read this yourself. It's very, very extensive. The Washington Examiner, what they've done is take paragraphs out of Nunes' memo, and then they say, this is what the FISA application says. And over again, they say, the Nunes memo, this is accurate, exactly what he was saying. Mm-hmm. Remember that Christopher Steele, on behalf of the Democratic National Committee and the Hillary Clinton campaign, formed an essential part of the Kyra Page FISA application. This is from the Nunes memo. Steele was a longtime FBI source who was paid over $160,000 by the DNC. Now, here's another interesting part in all of this. A lot of this information was fed to Yahoo News, all right? And then the report from Yahoo News was then fed back into the FISA application. You see the circular stuff here?
Yeah, right.
It's like me saying Ed Vitagliano has $1 million, Yahoo News reports that, and then it gets filed into an application to take to a court.
Mm-hmm. How'd you find out about that?
Yeah, isn't it called circular reporting or circular sourcing?
Circular sourcing.
Well, and the thing is, the FISA court would hear the news media has uncovered this information.
Yeah.
So they're thinking reporters doing their own research, their own investigations, have uncovered this stuff, but that's not how Yahoo.
It all came from one source.
It all came from one source, bought and paid for by the DNC and the Hillary campaign.
It's
this stinks to high heaven.
It does. But this is important, folks, because now it's not just the opinion or the alleged bias of a Republican, Devin Nunes. It's now being confirmed by the actual application from James Comey and McCabe and Loretta Lynch. Mm-hmm. So now they've married the two of these things together, and they're saying, by golly gee, Devin Nunes wasn't exaggerating. Everything that he said in this memo is true.
So what's the fallout from this, Fred? Have you heard anything over the weekend since this came out? I guess it was a FOIA request from Judicial Watch, Freedom of Information. Do you want to wait till after the break?
Let's listen to wait until after the break, because we have a clip from Andrew McCarthy, who's with the National Review, but he's a former assistant attorney general in New York, and Fox uses him. Let's wait until after the break, all right, to see what he has to say about this, because I think it's going to be very, very compelling.
And the reason we're saying that this is very, very important, and I just don't know what kind of legal trouble these folks could be in, whether it'll ever happen, but this is corrupt. Mm-hmm. Whether laws were broken, I just have to listen to legal experts. Whether laws were broken and people could go to prison, I don't know. But this is corrupt when you have the Obama administration's FBI and their intelligence services and you know, basically fooling the FISA court in order to torpedo an opposition party presidential campaign.
That could be illegal, misleading the court.
Yes, all the
if it's intentional.
Whether people can go to prison or not. But this is absolutely corrupt. And if our system breaks down to the point where the federal government will be weaponized against the other party, we're in deep, deep trouble. All right, folks, when we come back, more on this breaking news. You're listening to Today's Issues. We'll be back after this break.
On the next Today's Issues, our guest will be Sandy Rios of Sandy Rios in the Morning.
We are no longer a country that will stand for your demented words of violence and death. Be cautious. That's your president responding to President Rouhani. How different. How very different.
We'll also have news headlines and analysis from American Family News reporters. Don't miss the next Today's Issues, weekday mornings at 11 Eastern, 10 Central on American Family Radio.
You know, people often ask me, Tim, what's your favorite part of the Holy Land Tour? I've been leading Holy Land Tours for many years now. I'm Tim Wildman, president of American Family Association and American Family Radio. You know, I learned how to lead these Israel tours from my dad, who started doing them in the 60s. And then he taught me in the 80s and 90s. And now my wife, Allison, and I lead these tours annually to Israel. And we love going because we love seeing people's eyes when they see things such as the Sea of Galilee and the Jordan River and the Garden Tomb and the Wailing Wall. See all these things for the first time and maybe the last time in many folks' lives, because this is a bucket list trip. We're going to be going in March. If you want a brochure sent to your mailbox, give us a call at 800-FAMILIES, 800-FAMILIES, option 5. And we'll send you a brochure. If you want to go to the website, everything's there, twholyland.com, twholyland.com.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next. Hi, this is Todd Starnes from Fox News, and one of the things I love about Liberty University is the broad vision they have for their students. Instead of simply preparing them for a career, Liberty helps students grow into mature men and women of character, striving to impact their career fields for Christ. Liberty University is the largest Christian university in the world, offering more than 550 programs of study. Visit liberty.edu to learn more. Again, that's liberty.edu. The commander of Warren Air Force Base in Wyoming has decided to replace the Bible with a generic Book of Faith. The Military Religious Freedom Foundation had complained about the inclusion of that Bible on a table honoring prisoners of war. Colonel Stacy Joe Huser, the base commander, tells me she had the good book removed to ensure that the religious and non-religious feel included and cared for. It did not seem to matter that the Bible is a traditional part of the POW/MIA table. The Military Religious Freedom Foundation is dedicated to fighting what they call, and I quote, gangs of fundamentalist Christian monsters. They are especially triggered by nativity scenes on military installations. Their founder, Mikey Weinstein, once bragged about having a hotline to the Pentagon during the Obama administration. If that's true, President Trump needs to disconnect the number. I'm Todd Starnes.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
And welcome back. Ed Vitagliano, Walker Wildman, Fred Jackson. We are continuing to discuss information coming out over the weekend. Judicial Watch, through a Freedom of Information request, getting access to the FISA court application that was used to, Fred, I don't see anything wrong with saying spying on an American citizen.
Right.
It was under the political cover of trying to find out if this American citizen was making a deal with Russians, you know. But it seems clear that the intent of the, at least some in the Justice Department, was to use their power to go after the opposite party's candidate in the run-up to the 2016 election. This is corruption on a scale that I'm not sure we've ever seen. Maybe I'm being naive about things that have happened in other administrations. I'm sure Republicans have done some dirty stuff, but this seems on an entirely new level.
Mm-hmm. It's scary. Yeah. The whole justice system, I mean, as this points out, this is Loretta Lynch, the then Attorney General, all involved with this, the FBI Director, James Comey, his assistant, Andrew McCabe's wife at the time, running as a Democrat in Virginia.
Right.
And James Comey in recent days telling everybody to go out and vote Democrat.
Right.
James Comey's wife and somebody else involved with the march around the time of the inauguration of Trump.
Right. The march in Washington,
the
where
march.
so many just terrible things were said about Trump. We've talked about Madonna saying, dream of bombing the White House.
And James Comey's wife was there.
Right. Yeah, and I think the frustrating thing for folks like us is, you know, you see this corruption, and it's all being revealed and backed up by facts and documents. But there's nobody in the Trump administration that's going, yeah, there were some bad things that went on here, but look, we're going to fix it and watch us fix it.
Mm-hmm.
There's nobody doing that. Jeff Sessions, he hasn't put out a statement saying there were ethical problems going on in the prior administration and I'm trying to clean it up. Bear with me here. Nobody's doing that. Actually, they're all saying, we got this. Y'all need to, you know, Rod Rosenstein's saying, y'all don't need these documents. Y'all don't need to see what we're doing here. You know, nothing to see here. So that's the frustrating thing. Not that it's one thing to have bad things going on, but then there's nobody saying, we're going to straighten this out. And that's what frustrates me the most.
We mentioned just before the break that National Review columnist Andrew McCarthy, who is a former assistant attorney general in New York, was asked about the release of these FISA documents over the weekend and what it means. This is what he has to say.
When you read this thing, it's astonishing. It's as if they took the dossier and slapped whole cloth.
District court caption on it and gave it to the judge, which is exactly what I told people would never happen.
I must say, I mean, this is so bad that they ought to be looking at the judges who signed off on this stuff, not just the people who gave it. And this is so bad, it screams out at you.
Is it any wonder why President Trump keeps referring to this as a witch hunt? You begin to understand now that we're getting this stuff. This isn't partisan stuff. This is the application that was used by the Democrat Comey and Loretta Lynch to get the court's spying approval.
Right.
Now you understand. Now, the president has been aware of all of this for a long time.
Right.
So, like I say, is it any wonder why he keeps calling it a witch hunt and he gets accused of, you know, you're just trying to undermine the justice system? To your point a few moments ago, Walker, where is Attorney General Jeff Sessions with this? He recused himself right off the bat in all of this, with all of this information coming out of a corrupt system to begin with. Why doesn't he unrecuse himself and say that's enough?
Well, and also to the point we've been discussing for well over a year and a half, if he had not recused himself, and President Trump got very angry at Jeff Sessions for recusing himself, we wouldn't have had the Mueller investigation.
That's right.
So all this has been dragging on.
What, 2 years?
I think in April or May.
Mm-hmm.
It was a year, but there was also some investigation going on before the official Mueller investigation. So 2 years is a fair estimate, but. So the frustration from a lot of conservatives towards Jeff Sessions and the president is understandable.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because we say, listen, you should have been investigating the previous administration. I understand that doesn't look good when you have one administration coming in, opposite party, investigating the previous one. But it looks like there were real corrupt practices ongoing under the Obama administration.
Mm-hmm.
Targeting, people get upset about, you know, the fact that the Russians, you know, seem to have done some hacking and stuff for the 2016 election. Well, what about the Obama administration trying to interfere in an election by lying officials of the Obama administration lying to the FISA court?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I would argue even with Jeff Sessions being recused, he can still do things. Because a lot of these things are not necessarily investigative matters. They're just ethical issues within the department. So you have FBI rules being broken, DOJ rules being broken. All that has nothing to do with a specific case. That's just bad, that's employees breaking rules is what that is. So, but Jeff Sessions, I don't know where he is. I would say Jeff Sessions is one of the most disappointing appointments. He's come out to be one of the most disappointing appointments because all this is going on while he's supposed to be in charge.
And we've been defending him.
Yes.
By saying,
benefit of the doubt.
Certainly, yeah, giving him the benefit of the doubt. Certainly, there's got to be things going on behind the scenes because nobody is this inept.
Yeah. Right.
Okay. We've been saying there's got to be stuff going on. But now we're talking about a year and a half, 2 years later, and we're going, it doesn't seem, we don't seem any closer to the current Justice Department, you know, investigating and correcting the rules abuses and maybe even opening up possible prosecutions for law breaking. We don't seem any closer.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, in addition to all of this, we now have the House Judiciary Committee Chairman Bob Goodlatte, Republican from Virginia. He wants to bring the former director of the CIA under Barack Obama, John Brennan, in for a chat with his committee. Now, John Brennan's been in the news lately in the wake of the President Trump-Vladimir Putin news conference in Finland last week. John Brennan gets out there publicly and says the president's guilty of treason.
Treason.
Which is absolutely ridiculous statement, but he's out there. He says the president's statement to Putin about, which the president had to clarify, was treasonous. That's absolutely ridiculous. But listen to this. There's now been an op-ed in the Wall Street Journal which talks about what Brennan was up to back in August of 2016 when it started to appear that Donald Trump might become the next president of the United States. All right? The op-ed by Stressel, that's the name of the reporter, titled Brennan and the 2016 Spy Scandal, discussed how Brennan sought to push into the public spotlight the narrative that Russia was interfering in the 2016 election to help Trump get elected, and specifically did so in a late August briefing. He told the Senate Minority Leader, who is that? Harry Reid. That Russia was trying to help Mr. Trump win the election. So John Brennan, then CIA director, August of 2016, goes and has a little meeting with Harry Reid, the Senate Minority Leader. And Brennan tells him that Trump advisors might be colluding with Russia. And, of course, we know there's been no proof of that. Well, on cue after that briefing between Brennan and Harry Reid, Harry Reid writes a letter to James Comey, the FBI director, which, of course, immediately became public and insisted that the FBI investigate the matter. So John Brennan, it goes to Harry Reid and says, we think there's something up here, you know, a little chat with him. Harry Reid writes this letter, which finds its way to the desk of the FBI director, James Comey, who magically allows that to get out into the public. So the narrative begins. Remember the backdrop to all of this? Peter Strzok, FBI agent, talking to his girlfriend, Lisa Page, texting. And Lisa Page says, you know, Donald Trump might get elected president. And what did, remember what did Strzok
say? Peter Strzok said, we'll stop him.
Yeah, we'll stop him.
So you start
to... Oh, we'll stop it.
We'll stop it.
Yeah.
You start to put all of this together. Something really smells. Take your partisanship out of all of this. Something is not right. And is it any wonder, as I say, that President Trump has been out there saying enough is enough?
Mm-hmm. Well, and this goes on and could, I don't know, could affect the November election, could affect the 2020 election, depending on how long Mueller drags this out. Listen, this has been a disappointment, too, in terms of the Trump administration. We talked about Jeff Sessions, and we just talked about the seeming unwillingness to clean house, you know, in terms of the deep state. And they used to talk about, just to show that this can be a Republican issue as well, they used to talk about Richard Nixon, and, you know, where they called him Tricky Dick, and Nixon had his band of ne'er-do-wells who did dirty work, dirty tricks, and that sort of thing. Tricks sounds too nice. It was dirty politics, like we see. You frame someone, you release this to the media, you try to smear somebody. So this is not necessarily partisan, but the Nixon administration has gone down as one of the worst in history. Even discounting the good things Nixon was able to do in his term and a half, opening the door to China and those kind of things, it will always be tainted by the corruption, Watergate, obviously being the most public. So my, you know, my question is this going to happen to the Obama administration? It's not going to be as sudden as the Nixon fallout with Watergate, but as these steady drips come out, are even people on the left going to look at the Obama administration, regardless of whatever good things the left thinks he has done? Is the Obama administration going to be tainted by political corruption and the use of the machinery of the very, very powerful federal government to destroy lives? Talking about people like Michael Flynn, right? Yeah. I mean, has he lost his home and all this kind of stuff,
right,
trying to defend himself? There is incredible power behind the federal government, and they turn their sights on somebody. You have to get a lawyer to defend yourself. You're destroyed.
Well, there's case after case of the Obama administration dropping the ball on legal things. I mean, you had the Fast and Furious where our own government was sending guns that the U.S. government bought. They were sending them to drug cartels in Mexico, and they lost out. It was going to be a sting operation, but they just lost track of them. And those guns, one of them ended up using what was used to kill a Border Patrol agent. Mm-hmm. Well, who, you know, was disciplined for that? Nobody knows. You had Benghazi. I mean, there's case after case. You had Loretta Lynch meeting on the tarmac with Hillary Clinton.
Right.
Or with Bill Clinton while his wife's being investigated by the Department of Justice. So case after case of oddities that go on, and then nobody really has to answer for it.
You know, the one big difference, you do the comparison with Richard Nixon. In Richard Nixon's case, the journalists did their job.
Right.
Woodward and Bernstein did their job. They went out and did the
Washington
proper investigation.
Post reporters.
Yes. They did their job. They went out and exposed the corruption.
Right.
In the Watergate story. The difference now is that you have the media that is willing to look the other way because they love Barack Obama. They love Hillary Clinton.
And they hate Donald Trump.
Donald Trump. So you have some news agencies like Fox, and you have, to a certain extent, the Wall Street Journal on the print side that are willing to expose these kinds of things. Judicial Watch out there making these applications for freedom of information to get this stuff out there. But it's not being exposed to the extent it was in the Nixon years.
Yeah.
And that's what's troubling, too, is that the media now is a player with the Democratic Party to try to keep this or to discount it all, that sort of thing. And we just see this going on.
And the news media continues since those days.
Yeah.
To lose credibility with the American people. So,
sure thing.
You know, and I'm not blaming that on, for example, newspapers firing and laying off, but I think it goes hand in hand with the lack of credibility that the news media has. Mm-hmm. And that's why people just don't watch it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not all because of that. Mm-hmm. I mean, the habits of Americans in terms of gathering news are in the process of changing, but there can be no doubt that the news media, which is at the bottom of the respect column,
yep, mm-hmm,
when it comes to the
down
American
there with lawyers,
people,
they say,
and Congress, members of Congress, people just don't trust them because they're not doing what people have expected them to do,
yeah,
which is to comfort the afflicted and afflict the comfortable, as the old saying, mm-hmm, describing more than just the news media, but certainly journalists.
You know, I think the American public is catching on to this. I think Steve Jordahl will be in here in a couple of minutes, and one of the stories he has is talking about a poll that's been done recently about, you know, how concerned are the American people about alleged Russian interference? It's not on their radar.
Right.
What's on their radar is the economy.
Right.
You know, what's happening in my life in, you know, Iowa or Idaho or North Dakota. What's going on in my life right now? Well, things are looking pretty good. You know, the job is good, and there's far more jobs than people available to fill them. So they're looking at stuff like this. Also, I honestly believe the media and the Democrats have overplayed their hand in constant criticism of Donald Trump. I think folks in general are starting to say, even some who venture over into the liberal side of the political avenue, they're starting to say this is getting a little ridiculous. all we hear is negative, negative, negative of President Trump. And he can't be all that bad. This is what they're starting to reason. It can't be always bad,
right?
The way the media portrays it. So I think to a certain extent it's backfiring. You know, I saw another poll out there today where is it around 80% of the people who voted for Trump the last time still support him?
Yeah.
I mean, it's huge. To use a phrase, I think that
Donald Trump would approve.
Donald Trump would approve. So, anyway, we want to move on to the next
story.
Yeah, let's
go.
There's another headline here today. There is a war of words going on between President Trump and Iran's leader, Rouhani. There was a warning from Rouhani. Now, as a backdrop to all of this, this is President Trump going hard on Iran with regards to the deal that Barack Obama made with Iran. It's ridiculous. And so the Iranian economy apparently has been affected by this. And Rouhani put a warning out to President Trump that hostile policies could lead to the, quote, mother of all wars with Iran. Well, President Trump responded to that in a tweet last night in all capital letters.
So, which stands for shouting.
Which stands for shouting. And this is what the president had to say last night. Never, ever threaten the United States again, or you will suffer consequences the likes of which few throughout history have ever suffered before, period. We are no longer a country that will stand for your demented words of violence and death. Be cautious! Exclamation mark. All right, so that's out there. Sarah Sanders, who is a special advisor to the president, she was on Fox and Friends this morning, and she was understandably asked about this. Here's Sarah Sanders.
The president's been clear from the beginning, since the first day he took office and even before, that nuclear proliferation was something that he was not going to tolerate, something he would aggressively stand up and talk about. And he's certainly not going to listen to aggressive leaders from other countries and their empty threats against America. And he's going to stand up and make sure that we're protecting Americans and certainly protect the world from nuclear proliferation. It's something he takes seriously, and he's going to continue to be tough on this topic. You can rest assured he takes this process extremely seriously. He's monitoring and watching the actions of Iran.
So there you have it. That's Sarah Sanders talking about this tweet out late last night from the president warning Iran they better be careful, and that this new administration in Washington is not going to be as tolerant as previous administrations.
You know, one of the things while we were talking, I was watching, we have our Fox television news feed, you know, here in the studio. They had a graphic because everyone's talking about this war of words now with, you know, U.S. and Iran. But they had a graphic up there talking about the harassment of the U.S. Navy in the Persian Gulf. And it and the graphic showed that in 2015, the number of incidents of Iran harassing the U.S. Navy, 36. In the last year, 2016, the last year of the Obama administration, 25. In the first year of the Trump administration, 2017, only 14 incidents, 2018, zero. So I think the message on the part of Donald Trump to Iran is getting through, because you remember the incident where Iran captured a U.S. naval vessel?
The pictures.
The pictures of those U.S. sailors.
Yeah.
Some of them, I guess, afraid, so afraid, they were crying and on their knees. That I think Iran knows that would be viewed as an act of war with this president. It was not an act of war in the Obama administration, because we said on the air, I said the first thing that President Obama should do is call the Iranians and say, let them go or we'll consider it an act of war. They should have moved naval vessels, assets into that area so that they understood. And then they, if they did not release those, you know, whatever steps could be taken, then it would be considered an act of war. And once we got those sailors back, there should have been repercussions.
Yeah. Remember the first foreign trip that President Trump made? Where did he go? Saudi Arabia. Remember that? And he was building that coalition.
Yeah. Went to Egypt University after that.
Remember one of the last speeches Prime Minister Netanyahu of Israel made to the United Nations? He says there's a new world out there. We're making new allies.
Yeah.
Saudi Arabia. Their target, their common target now is Iran.
Right.
The Saudis, United Arab Emirates, they're very concerned about Iran.
Right.
It's a loose cannon.
And they're attempting to control the Middle East.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So you've got this interesting coalition that's coming together pointed at Iran. They don't have a lot of friends in the neighborhood. I still think the Russians are probably there. They're somewhat their allies, and the Chinese too. But Iran, for the most part, when it comes to these other countries, they're sitting there alone. They're aware, having watched what President Trump did with North Korea, you know, that's it. And they saw the North Koreans back down. Iran should take the words of President Trump last night very seriously, because we have learned that President Trump has a way of backing up those threats.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So be careful. Nobody wants a war with Iran. But like you say, if an American Navy vessel is threatened like it was there in the case of when Barack Obama was president, I don't think President Trump would react the same way at all. Mm-hmm. I think he would fight back. And they would be very much aware of the strength of the United States.
Well, look at North Korea. Now, there's some question about North Korea's intentions, and are they really going to come to the bargaining table? Are they really going to denuclearize the Korean Peninsula? We don't know. But let me ask you this. How many missiles have been launched,
right,
as test cases by North Korea
yeah.
since President Trump moved aircraft carrier groups into that part of the world? None.
Yep. Yeah.
And that goes along with what we saw in this, what I mentioned in this graphic with Iran. Because I think President Trump probably told the Navy, if you're harassed by these Iranian ships, shoot them.
Yeah.
You know, the little small speed boats, mm-hmm. they get into we're in international waters.
Right.
Iran doesn't own it. And if they come up too close, you shoot them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I think Iran knows that. And it would be embarrassing for that country, and they're staying away. But that's when the old expression, I think, Teddy Roosevelt talks softly and carry a big stick. Well, obviously, Trump doesn't talk softly.
Yeah.
He sometimes is shouting in all caps when he tweets, but carries a big stick,
yeah.
and there are certain leaders that know he'll use it.
Yeah.
Here's the other thing I think that's developed, too, which is quite interesting. Whenever you talk about tensions in the Middle East, there's always a concern about what kind of impact this is going to have on the price of oil.
Right.
Well, if President Trump has done what we think he has done, he has a pretty good allegiance with Saudi Arabia, one of the world's most prolific producers of oil. But remember the story that came out a few weeks ago, where there's now projections that America could soon be the world's greatest producer of oil, because President Trump is opening up the pipelines, as it were. In fact, we've got a lot of oil right now, and the only kind of narrowing in the pipeline is to get these pipelines finished and get them to the refinery. We've got a lot of product out there.
Yeah, refinery is the bottleneck.
That's the issue. Mm-hmm. But within a few years, they project America. That makes us independent.
Right.
Right.
Which adds a whole lot of strength. That is so important to national security. You got to link those two together.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
If we're independent, we're not worried about Middle East oil anymore or as right. much. That gives President Trump a big hammer.
Yes.
When we're dealing with these likes of Iran and Hezbollah and Hamas and places like that.
All right, Fred, thank you very much. Fred Jackson, News Director for American Family News and One News Now. We appreciate you being on with us, Fred.
You bet.
We're going to take a 5-minute break for news. When we come back, Steve Jordahl, reporter, news anchor for American Family News, will be in. And he will be discussing more of what's happening here and abroad. Again, 5-minute break for news, and we'll be back. You're listening to Today's Issues.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.